He started pulling everything out and throwing things to the floor. I stood transfixed as I watched. When he got to the eggs, he began throwing them at me. I tried to shield my face, but felt the sting on my cheeks as he whipped them at me as hard as he could. Within minutes, I was covered in fluids and food. He shut the refrigerator door and stared at me for a long moment.
"Why aren't you laughing now, slob?"
I stood rooted to the spot, too afraid to speak. My lip trembled as I muttered an apology. He nodded.
"You should be sorry. Clean this shit up and don't even think of asking any of the staff for help. It's your mess."
He walked over to the plate of cupcakes I'd been frosting and threw it on the floor. He unzipped his pants and urinated all over them. I started to cry out, but caught myself in time.
"You'll have to tell Bella you were too lazy to make her cupcakes,"
he wagged his finger at me.
"Bad mommy."
Then he turned around and opened the drawer where I kept my keys and jangled them in his hands before throwing them at me.
"And your keys were here the whole time, dummy. Next time, look harder. I'm so tired of having such a lazy, stupid wife."
He stormed from the kitchen and left me there, huddled in the corner, shaking. It took me over an hour to clean everything up. In a numb haze, I threw away all the ruined food, mopped, wiped, and cleaned until all the surfaces shone again. I couldn't let the staff see a mess when they arrived early tomorrow morning. I would have to stop at the bakery tomorrow and pick up cupcakes to replace the ones he'd ruined. I dreaded going upstairs, hoping he'd be asleep by the time I showered and got in bed, but I knew that it excited him to humiliate me. The lights were out when I finished drying my hair and walked over to my side of the bed. His breathing was even, and I heaved a sigh of relief that he was asleep. I pulled the covers up to my chin and was just about to drift off when I felt his hand on my thigh. I froze. "Not tonight."
"Say it,"
he commanded. "Jackson." He squeezed harder.
"Say it."
I closed my eyes and forced the words out. "I want you. Make love to me."
"Beg me."
"I want you now. Please." I knew he wanted me to say more, but that was all I could force out.
"You don't sound very convincing. Show me."
I pushed the covers back and lifted my nightgown off. Straddling him the way he liked, I positioned myself so that my breasts were in his face.
"You're such a whore."
He thrust into me with no regard to my readiness. I gripped the sheets and made my mind blank until he finished. 53. The next day, as usual, there was a gift. This time, it was a watch, a Vacheron Constantin, worth upward of 50 grand. I didn't need it, but of course I'd wear it, especially around his business associates and at the club, so everyone could see how generous my husband was. I knew how it would go. He would be charming for the next few weeks, compliment me, take me out to dinner, act solicitous. In truth, it was almost worse than his derision. At least when he was debasing me, I could feel justified in my hatred. But when he went for days on end masquerading as the compassionate man I fell in love with, it was confusing, even when I knew it was all an act. He checked in with me every morning to go over what I had planned for the day. That morning, I had decided to skip my Pilates class and get a massage and a facial instead. He called me at 10, like he did every day.
"Good morning, Daphne. I've emailed you an article on the new exhibit at the Guggenheim. Make sure you take a look. I'd like to discuss it tonight."
"Okay."
"On your way to the gym?"
"Yes, see you later,"
I lied.
I wasn't in a mood for a lecture on the importance of exercise. Later that night, I was having a glass of wine in the sunroom and reading the damn Guggenheim article while the girls were being bathed. As soon as I saw his face, I knew something was wrong. "Hello?" I made my voice bright. He was holding a drink.
"What are you doing?"
I lifted my iPad. "Reading the article you sent."
"How was Pilates?"
"Fine. How was your day?" He sat down across from me on the sofa and shook his head.
"Not great. One of my managers lied to me."
I looked up from the screen.
"Oh?" "Yeah, and about something really stupid. I asked him if he'd made a phone call, and he said yes."
He took a long swallow from his glass of bourbon.
"Thing is, he hadn't. All he had to do was tell me, say he'd planned to do it later." He shrugged. "Would have been no big deal. But he lied."
My heart fluttered, and I picked up my wine glass, taking a sip. "Maybe he was afraid you'd be angry."
"Well, that's the thing. Now I am. Really pissed, actually. Insulted, too. He must think I'm an idiot. I hate being lied to. I'll put up with a lot of things, but lying, I can't abide it."
"Unless he was the one doing the lying, of course." I gave him a neutral look. "I get it. You don't like liars."
Now who was treating someone like an idiot?
I knew there was no manager, that it was his passive-aggressive way of confronting me. But I wouldn't give him the satisfaction. I did wonder how he knew I'd skipped my class. "So what did you do?" He walked over to me, sat down, put his hand on my knee.
"What do you think I should do?"
I slid away from him. He inched closer. "I don't know, Jackson. Do whatever you think is right." He pursed his lips, started to say something else, then sprang up from the sofa.
"Enough of this bullshit. Why did you lie to me today?"
"About what?"
"Going to the gym. You were at the spa from 11 to 2.
I frowned at him. "How do you know that? Are you having me followed?"
"No."
"Then how?" He gave me a vicious smile.
"Maybe people are following you. Maybe cameras are watching you. You just never know."
My throat started to close up. I couldn't catch my breath, and I gripped the side of the sofa as I tried to stop the room from spinning. He said nothing, merely watched with an amused expression. When I finally found my voice, the only word that came out was, "Why?"
"Isn't it obvious?"
When I didn't answer, he went on.
"Because I can't trust you. And I was justified. You lied to me. I won't be made a fool of."
"I should have told you. I was just tired today. I'm sorry. You can trust me."
"I'll bestow trust on you when you deserve it. When you stop lying."
"Someone must have really hurt you in the past. Made a fool out of you," I said in a sympathetic tone, knowing it would get under his skin.
Anger flashed in his eyes. "No one made a fool out of me, and no one ever will."
He grabbed my glass of wine, walked over to the wet bar, and poured the remains in the sink.
"I think you've consumed enough calories, especially considering you were too lazy to exercise today. Why don't you go and change for dinner? I'll see you then."
After he left, I poured myself a new glass and thought about this latest revelation. I bet he was spying on me in other ways, too. I couldn't let my guard down at all. Maybe he'd bugged the phone or put cameras in the house. It was time for action on my part, and I needed a plan. He controlled all of the money. I was given a cash allowance for incidentals, but had to give him receipts for everything I spent. All the rest of the bills went to his office. He gave me no discretionary spending. Just one more way he tried to keep me under his thumb. He didn't know that I'd accumulated my own secret stash. I'd set up an email account and cloud credentials under a fake name on one of the laptops in the office and hid the computer in a closet underneath brochures and flyers, somewhere he'd never think to look. I sold some of my designer purses and clothing on eBay and had the money wired into an account he knew nothing about. I had everything go to a post office box I'd set up in Milton, New York, a 30-minute ride from the house. It was slow going, but over the past 5 years, I'd put together a decent enough emergency fund. To date, I'd saved close to $30,000. I also bought a pack of burner cells that I kept at the office. I didn't know yet what I was going to do with all of it, only that I'd need it one day. Jackson thought he had every angle covered, but unlike him, I was unfettered by delusions of grandeur. I had to believe that somehow they would be his undoing.
54. Christmas used to be my favorite holiday. I sang in our church choir every Christmas Eve, and Julie was always front and center, cheering me on. Then we'd go back to the inn and have dinner, happy to be the ones waited on for a change. We could give one gift early and save the rest for Christmas Day. The last Christmas that I spent with Julie, she'd been fidgety all through dinner, as though she was bursting with some secret she couldn't wait to share. I gave her my gift, a pair of gold ball earrings that I'd scrimped and saved for with my tips at the inn. When it was her turn, she handed me a small box, her eyes bright with excitement. I tore open the paper and lifted the lid. I gasped. "No, Julie, this is your favorite." She smiled and took the heart pendant from the box, holding it toward me to put on. "I want you to have it." She'd been so much weaker lately. I think she knew, or at least accepted, before we did, that her time was running out. I held back tears and grasped the thin chain in my hand. "I'll never take it off." And I didn't. Until after I married him, and I knew that if I didn't hide it away, he'd take it from me, too. It was safely nestled under the cardboard bottom of one of the many velvet jewelry boxes that contained his gifts to me. For the past 10 years, Christmas had been nothing more than an obscene display of consumption. We didn't go to church. Jackson was an atheist and refused to expose our children to what he called a fairy tale. But he had no problem perpetuating the Santa myth. I had stopped trying to reason with him. I did take pleasure in the girls' enjoyment. They loved the decorating, baking, and sights and sounds of the season. This year, I had another reason to be excited. I had Amber. I had to hold myself back from showering her with too many presents. I didn't want to embarrass her. There was something about her that made me want to take care of her, to give her all the things she never had. It was almost like I was giving Julie all the things she'd never lived to enjoy. We got up before the girls and went down to have our coffee. It wasn't long before they swept in, little tornadoes attacking the mountains of gifts with glee, and yet again I worried at the message we were sending them. "Mommy, aren't you going to open any presents?" Tallulah asked. "Yeah, Mommy, open a present," Bella chimed in. Mine were stacked in a tall pile, beautifully decorated in gold foil and elaborate red velvet ribbons. I knew what the boxes would contain. More designer outfits that he'd chosen, jewelry to show off how good he was to me, expensive perfume that he liked. None of the things I would have picked for myself. Nothing at all that I wanted. We had both agreed that the children's presents to us would be handmade, though, and I was looking forward to that.
"Open mine first, Mommy," Bella said.
She dropped the half-unwrapped package she had been opening and ran over to me.
"Which is yours, sweetie?" I asked.
She pointed to the only package covered in Santa paper.
"We wrapped it special so it'd be easy to spot," she said proudly.
I tousled her curls as she handed it to me, smiling as she perched on tiptoes, watching me wide-eyed.
"Can I open it for you?"
I laughed. "Of course." She ripped the paper and threw it on the floor, then pulled the lid off the box and gave it back to me. It was a painting, a family portrait. It was quite good. I hadn't realized what a sharp eye she had.
"Bella, it's amazing! When did you do this?"
"In school. My teacher said I have talent. Mine was the best one," You couldn't even tell what most of the others were. She's going to talk to you about art classes for me.
The picture was 12 by 12, and it was painted in watercolors. We were all standing on the beach, the ocean behind us, Jackson in the middle, with me on one side and Tallulah on the other. Bella stood across from the three of us, noticeably larger than we were. Jackson, Tallulah, and I were dressed in drab grays and whites, Bella in bright oranges, pinks, and reds. Jackson and Tallulah were both turned, looking at me. Tallulah looking glum, Jackson smug, and I was staring at Bella with a wide smile. The picture unsettled me. It didn't take a psychologist to figure out that the family dynamics were off kilter. I shook off the troubling thoughts and pulled her to me for a hug. It's beautiful, and I love it. I'm going to hang it in my office so I can look at it all day. Tallulah looked over. Why are you so much bigger than the rest of us? Bella stuck her tongue out at her sister.
It's called perspective, she said, stumbling on the word.
Jackson laughed. I think you mean perspective, my dear. Tallulah rolled her eyes and brought me her present.
Open mine now.
It was a clay sculpture that she'd made of two hearts united with a ribbon on which she'd painted the word love.
It's you and Aunt Julie, she said.
My eyes filled with tears. I love this, darling. It's perfect. She smiled and embraced me.
I know sometimes you get sad, but your hearts will always be together.
I was so grateful for this thoughtful child.
Open one of mine, Jackson said as he handed me a small box wrapped in red foil.
Thank you.
I took the package from him and began tearing the paper to reveal a plain white box, then lifted the lid to find a gold chain with a gold circle charm attached. I pulled it from the box and gasped. Tallulah took the necklace from my hand and looked at it and then at me.
Who's YMB, Mommy?
Before I could find my voice, Jackson spoke, the lie coming smoothly off his lips.
They're the initials of your mom's grandmother, who she loved very much. Let me put it on for you.
He fastened it around my neck.
I hope you'll wear it all the time.
I gave him a big smile that he would know was fake.
Just another reminder of how you feel about me.
He pressed his lips to mine.
Ew, Tallulah said, and both girls giggled.
Bella had gone back to her pile of presents and was tearing through the rest of his packages when the doorbell rang. He had agreed to let Amber come over and have dinner with us since she was going to be alone for Christmas. It hadn't been easy, but I staged the conversation in front of some of our friends, and he wanted to look like the Good Samaritan by including her. He greeted her like she was family, got her a drink, and we all sat around very agreeably for the next few hours while the children played with their things and we made small talk. Amber gave us all lovely gifts, a book for Jackson that he actually seemed to appreciate, books for the girls, plus some shiny jewelry for Bella, which she loved. When she handed me my gift, I was a little nervous, hoping she hadn't spent too much. Nothing could have prepared me for the thin silver bangle with two round charms engraved with the names Julie and Charlene.
Amber, this is so thoughtful and beautiful.
She held her arm up, and I saw that she wore the same bracelet.
I have one too. Now our sisters will be with us all the time.
Jackson was watching the exchange, and I could see the anger in his eyes. He was always telling me I thought about Julie too much as it was, but even Jackson couldn't take my joy away. Two gifts that honored my sister and the love I felt for her. I felt heard and understood for the first time in so long.
Oh, and one other little thing. She handed me a small gift bag.
Another present? The bracelet was enough. I pushed aside the tissue paper and felt something hard. My breath caught in my throat as I lifted it from the bag. A glass turtle.
I know how much you love them, she said.
Jackson's lips curled into a smile, and delight
shone in his eyes. And just like that, my feeling of being known and understood evaporated.
55. Meredith was throwing her husband a surprise 50th birthday party at Benjamin's Steakhouse. Truthfully, it was the last thing I was in the mood for. I was still tired from all the Christmas preparations, and we were leaving for St. Bart's in 2 days, but I didn't want to let Meredith down. She was insistent that the party be on the 27th, Rand's actual birthday, since over the years it had always been underplayed due to its proximity to Christmas. I'd just arrived in the city. Jackson had asked me to meet him at the Oyster Bar at Grand Central. That way we'd be right down the street from the restaurant, and it would only take us a few minutes to walk there. Even as I put on the Dior dress, I knew I was making a mistake. It was a favorite of mine, but Jackson didn't like the color. It was a pale gold silk, and he claimed it made my skin sallow. But it was a party for my friend, and I wanted to make a decision for a change. The moment I saw his face, the barely perceptible furrow of the brow, the small wrinkle worrying between his eyes, I knew he was angry. He stood to kiss me, and I took a seat on the stool next to him. He picked up the crystal tumbler and, with one flick of his wrist, downed the remaining amber liquid and flagged the bartender over. "I'll have another Beaumont and a Campari and soda for my wife." I was about to protest. I'd never even tasted Campari, but I choked back the words before they escaped. It would be best to let whatever plan he had concocted play itself out. "Meredith asked that we get to the restaurant by 7, so we don't run into Rand. She wants him to be surprised." Jackson arched a brow.
"I'm sure the bill will be surprise enough."
I laughed dutifully, then looked at my watch. "We've got about half an hour, and then we'd better get going." The bartender placed the drink in front of me. Jackson lifted his glass.
"Cheers, darling."
He toasted me with such force that my drink ended up all over the front of my champagne-colored dress, now splashed with red.
"Oh, dear. Look what you've done."
He didn't even try to hide his smirk. Heat spread to my cheeks, and I took a deep breath, willing myself not to cry. Meredith was going to be so disappointed. I looked at him with no change in expression. "What now?" He threw his hands up.
"Well, obviously, you can't turn up to the restaurant like that."
He shook his head.
"If only your dress were darker, or if you weren't such a klutz."
"If only you were dead," I wanted to answer. He called for the check.
"We'll have to go to the apartment and get you changed. Of course, by the time we do that, it'll be too late to make it in time for the surprise."
I forced my mind to go blank and followed him numbly from the bar. We got into the limo, and he ignored me while reading emails on his phone. I pulled my phone out and texted my apologies to Meredith. Because of traffic, it took over 45 minutes for us to get there. I smiled at the doorman, and we rode the elevator in silence. I went to the bedroom, threw the dress on the floor, and stood looking at the closet. I felt him before I heard him, his breath on my neck, then his lips on my back. I suppressed the urge to scream.
"Sweetheart, we don't have time."
His mouth traveled down my back to the top of my panties. He slid them off and cupped my buttocks with his hands. He moved closer, and I realized he'd taken off his pants. I could feel him hard against me.
"There's always time for this."
His hands moved to cup my breasts. Then he grabbed my hands and placed them flat against the wall. He is pressed on top of them. I braced myself as he took me, hard and rough, moving into a frenzied crescendo. It was over within minutes. I went into the bathroom to clean myself up, and when I emerged, my black Versace was hanging on the bedroom door. I grabbed it and laid it on the bed.
"Hold on," he said, walking toward me. "Wear this underneath."
It was a black Jean Yu thong with a matching strapless bra. He'd had it made to order for me, and it felt amazing, like a silk caress. But the sight of it only reminded me of what he'd done before he gave it to me.
I took it from him, though, and gave him my best imitation of a smile.
Thank you.
He insisted upon dressing me, pulling the stockings up my legs, stopping every few moments to brush his lips against my skin as he did so. Are you sure you wouldn't rather stay home and let me ravish you again?
He gave me a rakish smile.
Did he really believe I had any desire for him? I licked my lips.
As tempting as that sounds, we did promise, and Randolph is an old friend.
He sighed. Yes, of course, you're right.
He zipped my dress and tapped me on the behind.
Let's go, then. When I turned around, he looked me up and down. It's lucky you spilled your drink. That one's much better on you anyway.
By the time we arrived, an hour and a half later, everyone was just nibbling on the past appetizers. I gave Meredith an apologetic look as we rushed over to greet her.
I'm so sorry we're late.
Yes, Jackson cut in. I tried to tell her we were running behind, but she insisted on squeezing in a massage. It put us behind about an hour.
He shrugged. Meredith's face registered shock, and she turned to me, hurt, obvious in her eyes.
Why did you text me that you spilled something on your dress and had to go home and change?
I stood there, paralyzed by indecision. If I told her the truth, I'd have to contradict Jackson. Public humiliation would bring a heavy price. But now my good friend thought I'd lied to her just so I could indulge in some pampering.
I'm sorry, Mare. It was both. I had a pulled muscle. I spilled...
I stumbled on my words. Jackson watched me, an amused smile on his face.
What I mean is that, yes, I did get a massage. My back was really bothering me, but we still would have made it in time if I hadn't spilled my drink all over myself like an idiot. I'm really sorry.
Jackson shook his head and smiled at Meredith.
You know how clumsy our little Daphne can be. I'm always telling her to be more careful.
56. When I first met Amber, I could never have imagined that she would become someone I depended on. I'll admit, my first impression was of a somewhat homely and meek young woman with little to interest me except for the fact that she'd experienced a similar heartache. Her grief seemed so raw and fresh that it helped me put my own pain on the back burner to help her. I wanted to make it all better, to give her a reason to wake up in the morning. Looking back, I suppose I should have seen the signs. But I was eager for a friend, a true friend. No, that's not quite right. I was desperate for a sister. For my sister, which was, of course, impossible. The next best thing was a friend who'd suffered the same loss I had. It's bad enough to lose a sibling, but to watch one die a little each day... There's no explaining that to someone who hasn't experienced it. So when Amber appeared so unexpectedly in my life, she felt like a gift. I had no one in my life that I could trust. Jackson had done his job well, isolating me from everyone in my past and erecting impenetrable walls around my life. None of my friends knew the reality of my marriage or my life. But with Amber, I could share genuine emotion. Even Jackson couldn't do anything about that. The flowering friendship made him nervous. He didn't like for me to see any of my friends more than once every few weeks, unless, of course, he was there. When I'd asked him to find a job for her at Parrish, he'd been indignant at first.
Come on, Daphne. Isn't this little charity act wearing thin yet? What could you possibly have in common with that frumpy mouse?
You know what we have in common.
He rolled his eyes. Give it a rest, will you? It's been 20 years. Haven't you mourned enough? So her sister died, too. That doesn't mean I want her working in my company. She's around our family too much as it is.
Jackson, please. I care about her. I do everything you want, don't I?
I forced myself to walk over to him and put my arms around his neck.
She isn't a threat to you. She really needs a job. Her family back home depends on her. I can brag to everyone about how you rescued her. I knew he'd like playing the hero.
Hilda does need an assistant. I suppose we could give her a chance. I'll call Human Resources and have her set up for an interview.
I didn't want to take any chances. Couldn't you try her out without an interview, on my word? She's smart as a whip. She's done a better job as my co-chair than anyone before her. And working at Rollins, she knows a lot about your business. She worked on the commercial side.
Rollins? That's not saying much. If she's so good, why'd they let her go?
I had hoped to avoid telling him, but I saw no out. Her boss was sexually harassing her. He started laughing.
Is he blind?
Jackson, that's cruel.
Seriously, that dirty dishwater hair, the ugly glasses, and don't get me started on her lack of fashion sense, he said, shaking his head.
I was glad that he didn't find her attractive. Not because I cared if he strayed, but because I didn't want anything to cause me to lose her as a friend. And working for Hilda Batley, she'd be cocooned from any funny business from the men there. I felt good about helping her, and knowing that no one would traumatize her again. Please, Jackson. It would make me very happy, and you'd be doing a good thing.
I'll arrange it. She can start Monday. But you have to do something for me.
What?
Cancel your mother's visit for next month.
My heart sank. She's been looking forward to it. I've already bought tickets to the Lion King. The girls are really excited.
It's up to you. If you want me to hire your friend, then I'll need some peace and quiet. When your mother's here, I can't relax. Besides, she was just here for Tallulah's birthday.
All right, I'll call her.
He gave me a cold smile. Oh, and tell her that you're canceling because the girls want to take Sabine instead of her to the show.
There's no need to be cruel.
Okay, no job.
I picked up the phone and dialed. When I hung up, heartsick at the hurt in my mother's voice, he gave me an approving nod.
Well done. See? You don't need anyone but me anyhow. I'm your family.
57. I loved having a best friend again. I hadn't realized how lonely I was until Amber came along. Her manipulation was so subtle and gradual that I never had a twinge of suspicion. It wasn't long until we were always in touch with each other, texting when something funny happened, phone calls, lunches. I wanted her at the house all the time. I was ready to leave to meet her when I heard his car in the driveway. Stomach lurching, I contemplated sneaking out the back, but when I looked out the window, he was out of the car and talking to Tommy, our driver. Shit. He slammed the front door and stalked over to me.
Why do you need Tommy tonight? He said he's picking up Amber, too. Are you planning on drinking yourselves into oblivion like some sluts?
I shook my head. Of course not, just a glass or two, but I don't want to drive. She's been so busy with work, we wanted an evening to catch up. I thought you were taking clients out tonight.
The dinner was canceled. He studied me for a long moment. You know, she's the help now. It's actually rather unseemly for you to be friends with her. What if someone sees you together?
The heat spread from my neck to my face. She's become like a sister to me. Please don't ask me to stop being friends with her.
Upstairs, he commanded.
The girls were getting their baths. I had already said my goodnights. I don't want the girls to hear me. I'll have to go through the routine all over again.
He grabbed my hand and pulled me into his office, slammed me against the wall, and locked the door. He unzipped his pants and pushed me down to my knees. The quicker you get to it, the faster you can leave.
Hot tears of humiliation ran down my face, ruining my makeup. I wanted to refuse him, to tell him how much he repulsed me, but I was terrified. The slightest resistance to anything he wanted could result in the gun coming out again.
Stop crying. You make me sick.
I'm sorry.
Shut up and get to it.
After I finished, he tucked his shirt back in and zipped up his pants.
Was it as good for you as it was for me? He laughed. By the way, you look like shit. Your makeup's all smeared.
He unlocked the door and left without another word. I stumbled to the bathroom and ran some water under my eyes. I texted Tommy and told him to get Amber and come back for me. I couldn't let anyone see me this way. When I finally got to the bar and saw Amber waiting, I wanted nothing more than to pour out my heart, tell her what he was really like. Her friendship had lulled me into such a strong sense of security that I almost told her the truth about why I was late. But the words wouldn't come. And what could she do, anyway? As she looked at me with stars in her eyes, asking about my perfect marriage, I wanted to lay it all bare. But she couldn't help me, and there was nothing to be gained by being truthful. So I did what I had learned to do best. I pushed the reality to the back of my mind and pretended that my charmed life was all that it seemed. 58. The night that Meredith came to tell me that she'd discovered that Amber wasn't her real name, at first I believed Amber's explanation, that she'd been abused and had to run from her crazy father. After all, I understood what it was like to be a captive. If I thought I could survive and Jackson wouldn't find us, I'd have gladly assumed a false identity. But something in her story was familiar. Then it hit me. She'd used the same phrase. I'm so ashamed to tell you this. When she told me about her boss making a pass at her. The more I thought about it, the more her story sounded suspicious. I decided to listen to my gut and investigate, but I pretended to believe her. I had my own reasons, but Meredith thought I was crazy. She'd come over the day after the confrontation.
I don't care what she says, Daphne. You can't trust her. She's an imposter. I wonder if she even has a sister.
That was impossible, though. Even if she'd lied about everything else, she had to have a sister. I couldn't bear to believe that someone could be so cruel as to pretend she had suffered as I had, to make up stories about a sister struggling with this dreadful disease. That would make her a monster. And my best friend couldn't be a monster.
I believe her. Not everyone has the resources that we do. Sometimes lying is the only option.
She shook her head. There's something very off with her.
Look, Mare, I know you're only trying to protect me, but I know Amber. Her grief over her sister is genuine. She's had a rough life, and I understand that. Please, have a little faith in my judgment.
I think you're making a mistake, but it's your call. For your sake, I hope she's telling the truth.
After she'd gone, I ran up to my bedroom, opened my nightstand drawer, and pulled out the glass turtle Amber had given me. Holding it by the edges, I placed it in a plastic bag. I threw my hair into a ponytail, pulled a baseball cap low on my face, and changed into jeans and a t-shirt. I left the house with only my wallet and the burner phone I'd bought a few months earlier and walked the 2 miles into town. The cab I'd called was waiting in front of the bank on Main Street, and I jumped in the back. I need to go to Oxford. This address, please. I handed him the slip of paper and slid back in the seat, looking around to make sure no one I knew had seen me. My thoughts were racing as I considered the implications of Meredith's findings, and I felt sick. Was it possible that our entire relationship was built on pretense? Was she using me for my money, or was she after my husband? Slow down, I thought. Wait and see. 40 minutes later, the cab came to a stop in front of the brick building. "Can you wait for me?" I gave him a $100 bill. "I won't be long."
"Sure, ma'am."
I went up to the fourth floor and found the door marked Hansen Investigations. I'd found the agency online using a computer at the library. I went inside to a small empty reception area. No one sat behind the desk, but a door behind it opened and a man walked out. He was younger than I'd expected, clean-cut and kind of cute.
He smiled and walked toward me, his hand outstretched. Jerry Hansen.
I shook his hand. Daphne Bennett, I said. The chances that he knew Jackson or anyone in our world were slim, but I wasn't taking any chances.
I followed him into a pleasant room with bright colors. Instead of sitting behind his desk, he took one of the armchairs and indicated I should take the one across from him. How can I help you? You sounded pretty shaken up on the phone.
I need to find out if someone who's gotten close to me is who she says she is. I have her fingerprints. I handed him the bag. Can you find who they belong to?
I can try. I'll start with a criminal check. If her prints aren't there, I'll see if I can reach out to some folks who might be able to tap into private databases where she might have been printed for a job.
I handed him the newspaper article with her picture. I had circled her face. I don't know if this will help. She claims to be from Nebraska, but I don't know if she made that up. How long will it take before you find anything out?
He shrugged. Shouldn't take more than a few days. If we find a hit, I can put together a full report for you. To be safe, let's say next Wednesday.
I stood. Thanks so much. Text me if there's any delay. Otherwise, I'll see you on Wednesday. Is noon good?
He nodded. Yeah, that works. Listen, Mrs. Bennett, be careful. You hear?
Don't worry. I will. I took the stairs, feeling as though I would jump out of my skin if I didn't keep moving. I thought about all the intimate conversations, the parts of me I had shared with her. Julie. My darling Julie. If she did anything to make a mockery of my sister's memory, I didn't know what I would do. Maybe it would just be a misunderstanding. I got back into the cab to head home. Now, all I had to do was wait. 59.
It's not good, Mrs. Bennett, Jerry Hansen said as he slid the manila folder across the desk toward me. There's quite a bit to look through. I'm going to take a walk, get some coffee. I'll be back to discuss everything with you in about half an hour.
I nodded, already immersed in the file. The first thing I saw was a newspaper article with Amber's photo. Her eyes were heavily lined with black, and her hair was bleached platinum blonde. She looked sexy, but hard. Only her name wasn't Amber. It was Lana. Lana Crump. I read the article, then looked through the rest of the document. My hands shook as I put down the last piece of paper. I broke out in a sweat, reeling from the betrayal. It was far worse than I'd imagined. She had made everything up. There had been no sick sister, no abusive father. I had let her into my life, my children's lives, let her get close to me and told her things I'd never shared with another human being. She had played me, and brilliantly. What a fool I'd been. I'd been so blinded by my grief over Julie that I'd actually invited that jackal into my life. My heart actually ached. She was a criminal. A fugitive. And what she had done. It showed such a clear lack of conscience, no remorse. How could I not have seen it? Her entire life was here in these pages. A new picture began to form. A poor girl from a small town, consumed by jealousy and want. Covetous, predatory. She'd mapped out a plan, and when it had failed, she'd exacted her revenge. She had fooled everyone there, too, had turned another family's life upside down, irrevocably damaged them, then run away. Then she'd taken on a different identity. A chill passed through me as I thought of the real Amber Patterson's disappearance. Had Lana had a hand in it? Now I understood why she always hid from cameras. She was afraid of someone she'd known in her other life seeing her photo.
The door opened and the detective returned.
How did someone like you get mixed up with someone like her?
I exhaled.
Doesn't matter. Tell me, according to this, there's an open warrant out for her. What would happen if I called the police?
He leaned back in his chair and tented his hands.
They'd pick her up, call the Missouri police, and have her taken back there to stand trial.
What kind of sentence does perjury and jury tampering carry?
Varies by state, but it's a felony and usually carries a prison sentence of at least a year. The fact that she skipped out on bail is going to add some time as well.
What about what happened to that poor boy? Will that factor in?
He shrugged. There's not a punitive component to the criminal charges, so not technically. But I'm sure the despicable intent will sway a sentencing judge, even if he or she doesn't admit it.
This is all confidential, right?
He raised his eyebrows. Are you asking me if I'm obligated to turn her in?
I nodded.
I'm not an officer of the court. This is your report. You do what you want with it.
Thank you. This has nothing to do with Amber, but I need you to look into one more thing for me. I filled him in, handed him a folder, and left. I hailed a cab and had it take me to the bank, the one 20 miles from home where Jackson didn't know I had an account or a safe deposit box. I looked through the file one more time before putting it away. A picture caught my eye, a woman who must have been Amber's mother. That's when I realized the other thing she had done. And that is what convinced me beyond a shadow of a doubt that Amber, a.k.a. Lana, was as devoid of a conscience as Jackson. That revelation was liberating. It meant that I could proceed with the plan that I had begun to formulate in my mind. I wasn't going to turn her in. No, she wasn't going back to Missouri to serve a measly couple of years in prison. She was going to get a life sentence right here in Connecticut. 60. If there's one thing living with an abusive psychopath has taught me, it's how to make the best of a bad situation. Once I recovered from the betrayal, I realized Amber could be the answer to everything. It was now obvious that she'd only used me to get close to Jackson. She had manipulated me into getting her a job so she'd be right there every day. But the problem was, Jackson wouldn't be as easily fooled as I was. And as cunning as Amber was, she had only half the picture, no real idea what made him tick, what turned him on. That's where I'd come in. I would feed her the information she needed to succeed in turning his obsessive focus from me to her. Little by little, I would play her, just as she'd played me. I had to make him want her more than he wanted me. His money, power, and meticulous planning ensured that my only way out was for him to let me go. Up until then, he'd had no reason to do so. That was all about to change. I decided that I needed to pretend that he had once cheated on me. I wanted her to believe there was a crack in my marriage, that Jackson was capable of being tempted. We met at Barnes & Noble that Saturday, and when she approached, I almost didn't recognize her. Wow, you look fantastic. Her hair was no longer dishwater brown, but a beautiful ash blonde. Her brows shaped into perfect arches over thick, luscious lashes and perfectly applied eyeliner. Contoured cheekbones, just the right amount of blush, and glossed lips completed the picture. She looked like a different woman. She hadn't wasted any time transforming herself. Thanks. I went to one of those makeup places at Saks, and they helped me. I couldn't go to work in a fancy New York office looking like a country mouse. Please, that was a red door makeover if I ever saw one. I wondered where she'd gotten the money. Well, you look wonderful. After browsing a bit, we went across the street to a cafe for lunch. So how are things going? Still loving the job? I asked. Yes, I'm learning so much, and I really appreciate Jackson giving me the chance to fill Batley's shoes. I know it wasn't easy for him, after working with her for so many years. I had to hand it to her. She gave
nothing away. I don't know how she did it, but when Jackson came home a few short months after Amber had started and told me that Batley had resigned, I'd suspected she'd had a hand in it. She was a gem, so loyal. Jackson didn't really tell me why she decided to retire early. Do you have any idea?
She raised her eyebrows.
Well, she was up there in age, Daff. I think she was really more tired and taxed than she let on. I had to cover for her more than once.
She leaned in toward me conspiratorially.
I probably saved her getting fired on a few occasions when she deleted an important meeting from Jackson's calendar. Luckily, I caught it in time and fixed it.
How lucky for her.
Well, I guess she realized it was time. I think she was ready to have more time for her grandkids, too.
I'm sure. But enough about work. What's going on with your personal life? Any cute guys at the office?
She shook her head. Not really. I'm starting to wonder if I'll ever meet someone.
Have you considered a dating service?
No, I'm not really one for those kinds of things. I'm a big believer in fate.
Sure she was.
I get it. You want the old-fashioned boy-meets-girl story.
She smiled.
Yes, like you and Jackson. The perfect couple.
I gave a small laugh.
Nothing's perfect.
The two of you sure make marriage seem easy. He looks at you like you're still on your honeymoon.
I had my opening to make her think there was trouble in paradise.
Not lately.
We haven't had sex in 2 weeks.
I cast my eyes downward.
Sorry. I hope you don't mind my talking about this.
Of course not. That's what friends are for.
She twirled the straw in her iced tea.
I'm sure he's just tired, Daff. It's been crazy at work.
I sighed.
If I tell you something, do you promise not to tell a soul?
She leaned in closer.
Of course.
He cheated on me before.
I saw the delight in her eyes before she was able to disguise it.
You're kidding. When?
Right after Bella was born. I still had some extra weight, and I was tired all the time. There was this client. She was young and pretty and hung on his every word. I had met her at a social function, and from the way she looked at him, I knew she was trouble.
She licked her lips.
How did you find out?
Now I was just making it up as I went along.
I found her panties in the apartment.
Are you kidding? He took her to your place in New York?
Yes. I think she left them deliberately. When I confronted him, he fell apart, begged my forgiveness, told me that he'd just felt so ignored with all the time I spent with the new baby, and she'd flattered him so much. He admitted that her adoration was just too hard to resist.
Wow.
That must have been so hard for you.
But at least you bounced back. The two of you seem very happy. And you have to give it to him for not lying.
I could see the wheels turning in her mind. I think he did feel bad. He swore it would never happen again. But now I'm seeing some of the same signs I did back then. He's working late all the time. Not initiating sex. Seems distracted. I think there must be someone else.
I haven't seen anything suspicious at the office.
There's no one there that seems to be hanging around him more than usual?
She shook her head.
Not that I can think of. I'll keep an eye on him for you, though, and let you know if I think there's anything you have to worry about.
I knew she'd keep an eye on him, and maybe more than that.
Thanks, Amber. I feel so much better knowing you're there looking out for me.
She put her hand on mine and gave me a steady look. I would do anything for you. We have to stick together. Soul sisters, right?
I squeezed her hand back and smiled.
Right.
61. It was easy to arrange. He had been looking forward to seeing Hamlet, and I knew he wouldn't want to waste the valuable second ticket. Bella wasn't really sick, but I purposely bowed out of the show, hoping he'd invite Amber. He was furious that I'd missed it. My phone rang that night at midnight.
Don't you ever do that again. You hear me?
Jackson, what's wrong?
I wanted you with me tonight. I had plans for you after the play.
Bella needed me.
I needed you. The next time you break plans with me, there'll be serious consequences. You got it?
Apparently, Amber had no idea about his bad mood. She called me the next morning with just the right things to say. Hello? Hi, Daff, it's me. Hey, how was the play? Rustling papers on her end. Amazing. My first Broadway play. I was in awe the whole time. Her Pollyanna act was getting old. I'm glad. So what's up? Oh, well, I just wanted to let you know that by the time we got out, it was late, and so we stayed at the apartment. Oh? I made my voice sound appropriately on guard. Jackson insisted that it was silly for me to go all the way home when I had to be back so early in the morning. I took the sheets off the guest room bed and put them in the laundry room so the housekeeper would know they needed to be changed. Clever of her. She couldn't come out and state that she'd stayed in the guest room, or she'd be implying that there was a chance she'd slept with my husband, but she was letting me know that nothing had happened.
That was thoughtful. Thanks.
And I borrowed your red Armani suit, the one with the gold buttons. I hope you don't mind. I obviously hadn't brought a change of clothes. I tried to figure out how I would feel if I still thought she was my friend. Would I have minded? Of course not. I bet it looks great on you. You should keep it. Let her see that it meant nothing to me, that Jackson's wife had so much, I could afford to give her my cast-offs as if they were no more significant than a pair of gloves. A sharp intake of breath came over the line. I couldn't. It's a $2,000 suit. Did I detect just the slightest bit of reproach in her voice? I forced a laugh. Did you Google it? A long moment of silence. No. Daphne, are you angry? I think I've upset you. I knew I shouldn't have gone. Come on, I'm just teasing. I'm glad you went. Got me off the hook. Don't tell Jackson, but I find Shakespeare a bore. That wasn't true, but I knew she'd use that bit of misinformation to her advantage. I mean it about the suit. Please, I want you to have it. I have more than I can wear. What are friends for? I guess, if you're sure. Listen, I've got to run. Jackson needs me. Sure. Before you go, are you free this Saturday? We're having a few friends over for a dinner party, and I would love it if you'd come. There's someone I'd like you to meet.
Oh? Who?
A guy from the club who happens to be newly single and perfect, I think, for you. I had invited Greg Higgins, a trust fund baby. He was in his late 20s and extremely good-looking, which was fortunate for him since he didn't have much going on upstairs. His father had given up hoping that Greg would take over in the family business, but had given him a big office and a title and let him spend his days having long lunches entertaining clients. He would be putty in Amber's hands and falling all over her, which is just what I wanted Jackson to witness. He wasn't in the same league as Jackson by any stretch, so I didn't worry about him actually distracting her, but he would be irresistible to her for the time being, her ticket to the club, glamorous events, and someone to pamper her until she achieved her ultimate goal. I figured she was also smart enough to realize a little competition would be good for arousing Jackson's interest. Her voice was warm now. That sounds interesting. What time should I be there? Starts at 6, but you're welcome to come a little early. Why don't you come at noon and we can hang by the pool for a while and then get ready around 2? Bring your clothes and you can shower and dress here. In fact, why don't you plan to spend the night? Fantastic, thanks. I wanted Jackson to see Amber in her bikini, and given how she'd stepped up her game lately, I knew she'd come over looking like something from the pages of the Victoria's Secret catalog. I ended the call, grabbed my tennis racket, and left.